Thank you to the sponsor of today's podcast, Call of Dragons. Call of Dragons is an original, immersive, and epic fantasy world. Taking place in the world known as Tamaris, team up with the elves, orcs, celestials, goblins, and countless other magical creatures to build your vast army. Dive into your own fantasy city with unique decor for each faction. Arrange your city as you see fit, and build the unique fantasy metropolis of your dreams. Once you leave the safety of your own city, prepare for battle alongside your scary but friendly behemoth. Command your behemoth to aid you in battle with a variety of epic behemoths are scattered across Tamaris. Powerful giant bears, venomous hydras, lightning-fast thunder rocks, and terrifying flame dragons. Work together with your alliance to defeat them and bring them under your command, then unleash them in battle. And please don't forget to name them. Train up your heroes with unique skills that can turn the tide of battle in an instant. Unleash powerful abilities to wipe out your opponents with a huge array of equipable magical artifacts, each with their own unique skills. Turn invisible, move at astounding speed, teleport or heal your units in an instant. Equip your heroes with an artifact that suits their abilities and unleash artifact skills to dominate the battlefield. Call of Dragons has true 3D terrain that shapes the gameplay. Tamaris is a land of mountains, rivers, valleys, tundra, and countless other features. Not only is it beautiful, it's also essential to use your terrain to your advantage. Build your city on a plateau to make yourself impervious to attack. Set up an ambush in a mountain valley to wipe out enemy forces, or occupy the high ground and cut all would-be invaders down to size. And that's just scratching the surface. In Call of Dragons, combat isn't just a matter of numbers. With the right strategy, you can turn any situation to your advantage. All these features come together to create an incredible fantasy battle experience that allows you to wage war your way. So, if you're ready to jump into the fantasy world of Tamaris, download Call of Dragons today on PC or mobile by using my link in the description.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Chad, how spicy do you like your food?
Milk toast.
You're not a spicy boy?
I have horrible, horrible stomach acid all the time. So I love Mexican food. I am so embarrassed when I go to a Mexican food place and I'm like, can you take the tomatoes out, please? They're a little too acidic. Like, I have to do that now for everything. And Why? What about you, Kevin? Why do you ask?
I just made myself some spicy burritos, and I love the spicy, but I have a limit to it. And every time I ruin food, I feel like it's because I make it too spicy.
Is it spicy too spicy for you or too spicy for others you're serving?
Often too spicy for other people I'm serving. I will suffer through my own horrible spicy food, but I dislike inflicting it on other people when I see the pained expressions on their faces.
Yeah, my entire life, there's never really been a taste with the heat. It's just pain.
Okay.
I don't know if it's a lack of certain taste buds or whatever it is. It's just always been like, oh, this is not fun. It's the equivalent of being like, hey, would you like some extra needles in your food? I'll put some needles in your food.
I did not do spicy until like my mid-20s. And I was like, oh, now food is a game I can win.
Yeah, I like the, I wish I do, because I do like the, I bet you and I both have this sort of, it's not toxic masculinity, but this sort of old idea of like real men can eat all day and drink all the beer and eat all the spicy food
they want. Oh, yeah, yeah. There are no limits to the masculinity. You're hard drinking, you're spicy eating. You don't have inner biology of any kind. You're a man.
Yeah, yeah. We all start, I think our generation started it with warheads. Right? That was the, like, yeah, just put, like, 10 in your mouth and see what happens.
I hated warheads. I thought they were just fucking garbage. But, like, I think that's also, like, if you have to set a boundary, then you're not a man.
I know, which is so insane that we make these... I wish I could partake. I wish I could get into... I don't know, you see, like, the things like those Hot Ones interviews and stuff, yeah. Where it's, like... There is a... Even there, though, there's, like, a culture in the comments... That if you can't eat more than a certain amount of hot wings, you are an inferior person.
I mean, that is YouTube. Like, the YouTube commenter is a crafty foe who just wants to judge people based on the easiest rubric available.
True. And I will say, DJ Khaled tapped out at like 2 or 3 and made his own chef, made his own wings. And yeah, I'm like, he's a coward. But maybe for other reasons unrelated to your tolerance to spicy foods.
What is that dude's problem with putting things in his mouth?
I know, right? It can be fun for other people, DJ Khaled.
What a wiener.
Well, now I'm hungry.
Oh, sorry, man. You're doing this right after work, and I'm doing this right after dinner.
No, it's all right. You know, not to piddle, one thing I was going to ask you, Kevin, about, and you know, I guess I'll ask Paul about it in the future when he joins us. Paul's out for the episode.
The boy needs rest, so we put him to bed.
Yeah, he was seeing his family on the other side of the country. He was doing good deeds, and he needed rest.
Oh yeah, shoot, I forgot. We usually do a lie. Paul is in the tornado dimension, being tortured by air elementals.
It's always just a different void, a phantom zone. Yeah, there's never anything other but one element that just tortures you.
Yeah, Paul fell into the visiting his family dimension, and now he is back home, but is stuck in the void of catching up on work that he missed over the last week.
I was just kind of curious, Kevin, if you have become aware of the new... I know you're not on TikTok much. I'm trying to not get much. You on TikTok.
But a little bit. A little
bit. Especially on TikTok and other social media, this trend of, like, NPC accounts.
Yeah, go on, please.
Okay, so I'm going to try to do my best to explain it. And it's very... I think that's NPCs kind of becoming the default term to it. But these are real live people on live streams who are staring straight at the camera. And they are essentially kind of acting like an NPC from a video game. Not in so much of like, hello, well met, I have a quest for you. But they are instead repeating like 10 to 20 different phrases or actions based on... what emotes or digital gifts are given to them. So like the most famous one is a woman pinky something that's like ice cream so good, yum yum yum.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, I did see that thing, and I was like, I closed the tab, like I just left my computer. I was like, I've gone too far, it's for the kids.
Right. gang gang, or like someone donates a cowboy hat and then a cowboy hat appears on her head and she has to suddenly start going, "Wee, I'm a cowboy," and she makes bank, like she supposedly is making a ton of money. And since then, half of my TikTok feed, if I go on live, is just different people doing NPC characters. I saw one that was very funny of like a young Victorian child. There was just like, she would sneeze or then be like, I would like some more food, or like cough.
I like the idea of a person who is really good at just being a human soundboard or whatever, and them finally being like, oh shit, I can monetize this. I'm quitting my job right now to go do things that teenagers tell me to do.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have had the reaction of, oh, well, this is horrifying. And at first I also was like, what have we done to society, right? and to take my, you know, partner Heidi's very good take, she looked at it and was like, I don't see what the big deal is. This is just customer service.
which also horrifies me. We should
treat our everyone better, of course.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I think she related to like, yeah, you know, she used to do like customer service for like Grubhub and stuff. And she's like, yeah, you just pick up the phone and you say one of 10 things emotionlessly and soullessly to get through the time and make people feel better and make your money. And that's just That's part of it. And I was like, that's really smart. And then I was like, I kind of want to make an NPC character myself. And I was going to ask you, Kevin.
Oh, wow.
As you're processing this, what do you think your NPC character would be?
Oh, geez. I feel like my reactions to things, I'm at a disadvantage here because my reactions to things are a slow build. Like, they'd send like a frown emoji, and like over the next 15 minutes, I would just sort of like, you'd see the storm cloud forming in my head of something that I don't like, or like an argument in my head that I'm trying to win with a fictional person or something
and again, these NPCs, they're really successful. You are getting like swarmed by donations and like digital roses and shit. So what you're telling me is you would have a 15-minute delay for each one that's all building.
I wouldn't have like an interrupt. I do it like Dark Souls, where like you could, like when you hit the button on a delay,
yeah,
like you kind of cue the action.
Yeah.
So all of the emotes would happen, but like they would be stacked in the queue rather than interrupting each other.
I love that. I love that. It's also really, you're really making, in an era of people who are like, I need instant gratification, they got to really stick around.
Yeah, it would be the exact same like pattern. Like, I would practice and train myself to like go through the exact same face journey on all of these things. But yeah, you would get to see me contemplate things and just kind of spin out and waste my time.
So it'd be like Kevin the philosopher would be the character. Okay, yeah, I like that.
Chad, I want to hear what yours are, but I've got a thing to throw on the end of this, I feel.
Okay. I asked a question. I think the obvious one would be like a ska kid. That'd just be pretty fun. But
you know, just kind
of pick it up, pull a little trumpet and go, bah, 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 you know, just to kind of rotate them in and out. But actually I wonder if it'd be more fun to lean into like, just it's summer, it's hot, and maybe I just play like a cool your local neighborhood pool lifeguard. guy who's not even necessarily that in shape, baby CPR certified, you don't know, and mostly just like, hey, No running. Or, hey, could you get me something from the vending machine? Or poop in the water.
That's a good bit. And it's emotionally distant from like your real self. Like, you're not a lifeguard.
So yeah, like,
you don't have to take your work home with you. I think my mistake was making it too close to me.
Yeah. You gotta distance yourself. I think like, you can turn it off when you get out of it. When you turn off the live stream, when you've made $10,000.
Yeah. I got to be able to clock out.
I have one where it's just like, oh no, I lost another one. Oh no.
That one you can make pretty expensive. And then,
Yeah, that's the expensive cop car one. You guys go, that one. Or ambulance. Yeah.
I think the problem with this industry is it just seems like ripe for AI to take it over, you know?
Yes. This actually would be one. This would be AI plus VTubers.
Yeah, you're like super training the AI by doing the same thing over and over and over again. So now it knows which parts to put variants in.
Yeah, I wonder if that would actually take away some of the allure. Because, listen, I don't watch these streams. They're not for me. But I've noticed that whenever I search these NPC streamers, the most popular clips are the time that they break. It's like you're watching SNL not for the sketches, but just to watch Jimmy Fallon break.
That makes it an interesting kind of art form in the AI like spin up era that we're in right now, or the year of AI spinning up. I don't know if it's going to be a fucking era. It might just be.
Yeah, God.
But yeah, it's like by a human doing performance art as a machine is kind of irreplaceable by machines, because you don't have the moment where they break. Or maybe you can still have that moment, but it's even weirder.
Yeah, the VTuber accidentally said a hate crime or something. And you're like, look at this. Get a load of this.
Yeah, it's not funny when a human does that, but when a robot does it, it's kind of
charming. Robot does it, yeah.
When a robot goes off on the French Canadian. Welcome to Goosebuds. My name is Kevin.
Welcome to Goosebuds. My name is Chad. As we said, Paul is in the family dimension, being ripped apart by tornadoes.
Yeah.
He cannot be here. So we, Kevin and I, have the sole responsibility. Normally we cover R.L. Stein books and give them the hard-hitting critique they deserve. But today we are returning to a side series, not written by R.L. Stein, but Rand Jonathan's American Chillers, specifically Nebraska Nightcrawlers.
Nebraska Nightcrawlers. We kind of picked this one because it was the one we could find.
Don't tell them that. Don't let them see that far behind the curtain.
That's fine. That's fine for people to know.
That's fine.
It's one we could find. And
it's the scariest book we could find.
Honestly, for like 70% of this book, it's a ripper. Like, it's pretty good, I thought.
Yeah. I had some problems with it, but yeah.
You don't have to agree with me, Chad. I think it's more like 50-70% of this book is pretty good. But I felt so free reading this because I don't know. It's just kind of written like more like energetically than a Goosebumps. I feel like shit's happening. We're going forward. Characters have maybe two traits.
Yeah, that is helpful. I think we are pretty much going to be won over. Is if your book has anything happening in the first half of the book instead of just jump scares, makeouts,
yeah,
you immediately jump like most of the tiers of the books we've covered on this show.
And this book does have jump scares and fakeouts and a few tropes that we despise in like children's horror literature or young adult horror literature. And those are a little inexcusable, but there are some excellent parts of Nebraska Nightcrawlers. For one, there's some excellent summer vibes going on in this one.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does paint, does feel the vibe of, what would you do if you had your whole summer to yourself? Well, maybe this one kid starts a small business gathering nightcrawlers.
Yeah, so Jim Newkirk is our main character, and he's joined by his friend Brittany Olson, who lives across the street. They're way out in rural Nebraska, but they're like kind of close to a city. But
the village of Denton, they say.
Denton, Nebraska. So they're in Denton. They're close to Lincoln, Nebraska, I think, which is the capital of Nebraska.
I said he was born in Lincoln.
Denton is the town where his parents go later. So that's when they go in town. They go to Denton.
These are all real cities.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no history with Nebraska.
Yeah. These books wouldn't lie about Nebraska geography.
And like they have that nice quality of like kind of trying to pander to the state a little bit, like the premise is influenced a little bit by the state slightly, kind of, I guess.
Yeah, I think this and Detroit both had the equivalent of like those sort of like novelty tourist gifts that are like only in Indiana. And it's like Indiana's made by like what are the first five Google search results, and it's like corn. And David Letterman's face and like an Indy 500 car, but it's like stretched to make out the letters. I'm like, I know that you're selling me just the Indiana one. And in every single state, you guys made one for that state. Don't act like I'm special.
No, but Massachusetts is special. We've got lobster. We've got chowder. Probably seafood.
Lobster chowder.
Chowdered lobster is also pretty good.
You got Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, do we?
I don't know. I just assumed he was from. Is he like a New England?
Yeah. I know Family Guy is Rhode Island, though.
Rhode Island. Sorry. Yeah. To me, you guys, you're all of those states. You're all so small. Like,
it's true.
I feel like y'all should at some point just go like, we're really just one state. Come on.
I mean, we all share like one football team, basically.
What, the Patriots? Yeah. They're all just, yeah. Just, I don't know. I don't know why I'm trying to destroy the Democratic Electoral College by making you one state. That would actually destroy our country, but it just feels like become a territory or something.
I mean, Massachusetts, it's fine to have small states. Like, there are more people live in Massachusetts. Like, our population's large, even if our size is small. That's the kind of idea that Nebraska Nightcrawlers introduces.
So you talked about Jim. Jim. His friend Brittany is, I think, a particularly special young girl in that she is down to spend her late evenings gathering in the mud, not to lean on gender tropes, but I feel like a 90s Midwestern or Nebraskan girl is not going to be so into just, I'm going to spend my whole nights in the muck pulling up gross worms. And it seems like she's not getting a cut of any of this.
She is. She gets 4 cents a worm.
That's not enough.
Well, I actually did the math. And so Jim says right away that he sells a dozen worms for a dollar.
Okay.
And later on, Brittany says that she got 65 worms, for which she is paid the sum of $2.60.
Okay. Oh, I misread that and thought that was his entire haul. I didn't realize that was her haul. Got it.
Yeah. She brought in 65 worms, for which she was paid $2.60 in 10-year-old money. So, you know.
All right. So I'm doing the math. If he sells 12 worms for a dollar,
he gets $5.41 or 42 cents, wherever you draw the line.
Well, no, so yeah, he's getting 8 cents per worm selling that and giving Brittany four, but he's actually getting 8.3 cents per worm. So he's taking 0.3 extra cents for Brittany for being the CEO of this company.
Well, he also has to do, he has the equipment. Like,
you're right. He does have overhead.
Although he doesn't have much overhead. We learned that he just kind of, he doesn't really tend shop. He like just kind of runs it on the honor system.
Yeah, I don't trust old men who would just come by and leave money in a jar. I don't think that they're doing that often.
Yeah, he made $200 last year, which is a lot for a 9-year-old to make.
Yeah, also 90s time. That's like $10,000 now.
I think these are the 2000s, actually. I think I don't know the exact date, but I think this is set in the early 2000s.
Okay, I'd still say even then, that's a lot more money.
Oh my God, if he gave 9-year-old me $200, like I would be unstoppable.
I would buy Massachusetts.
Listen, it's a small state, but it's a very expensive one as well. I can't buy Massachusetts for $200. I would have at this point.
But Brittany, I just think Brittany's a really special girl to be down to do this. I mean, she's making a little bit of money, but still, it's amazing her dedication.
It's cool their parents are like fine with them going out at night and rooting around for worms to make profit. I guess like what the hell else are you going to do in rural Nebraska for fun? But Jim's business selling worms is going pretty well, and Brittany seems like a good friend and business partner. Brittany also talks about setting up a lemonade stand across from the worms, so she might be making more money than Jim on this.
Oh, you know, I forgot that would be smart to sort of have like you lure him in for the night crawlers, but then you make your real the profit margins on lemonade on sugar water is great.
At this point in the story, I didn't know if we were going to have like carpets of worms destroying kids or if it would be giant worms destroying kids.
I was not anticipating giant worms.
I also was not anticipating giant worms, but we get like some lovely description of the night where you would not hear this in an R.L. Stein. The Nightcrawler hunt begins, darkness set in and crickets chirped like a symphony. You just wouldn't get that in R.L. Stein. He wouldn't care enough. Like there were a few books where like he bothered to like set up a scene or whatever. But I think it's few and far between. You get like some actual like metaphors or similes or
sure. Kind of yeah. You know, and I will counter your compliment at this point to be like, there was some nice, I guess, prose in this. There's a little bit of narration. There is also, I don't know, again, of all of these authors of these books, you just got to hit a certain page count or something.
In a certain amount of time, too, I imagine.
Yeah, there are countless amount of times in this book where the narrator, Jim, will say, I realized the Nightcrawlers were eating the fertilizer and growing bigger. Space, new line, quote, Jim, the Nightcrawlers are eating the fertilizer and getting bigger, I said. Like, not even a variation on it, just sort of like copy and paste to the point. I just kept double taking that, like, really? It really pads out this book a lot.
Yeah, the book is padded as hell, and spoiler alert, the ending sucks. But up until like the monster reveal, I'm liking this book quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm rooting for these kids more than normal Goosebump kids.
Yeah, the tone is cool, and the you know I don't know where they're going with things yet, but I'm excited. Like they're hitting a bunch of like cool like nostalgic Americana child capitalism notes. I think this one starts out strong, but yeah, it kind of starts to degrade. In the night, they're surprised by Bradley, who's Bradley Olson, who's Brittany's older brother, and his friend Kevin Miller. And these guys totally suck and do nothing useful for the entire book.
Love to push their bikes through cornfields, which is not how that ever works.
Yeah, I don't know the physics of traversing a cornfield, but I imagine you might, Chad.
I know that's, as well as the Snipes said, it's like trying to ice skate uphill.
Ooh. I know we make mazes out of corn, not just because it's a fun pun on maze, but also because corn is impenetrable.
Sure, in a maze you could ride your bike around, but even then I think you're going to get some pop tires. It's just a bad idea.
So we meet Bradley and Kevin, and they're being typical older kids scaring younger kids. Mm-hmm. And they go laughing back to the Olsen's house, and then boom, we hear them scream, and Jim and Brittany are like, oh shit, we gotta go save Brad and Kevin, because they screamed like a teenager screams.
Yeah.
They go find them, and they're up a tree being like, oh, we saw a giant nightcrawler. And it's like, that can't be true. There's a lot of your least favorite trope, Chad, of this easily verifiable thing can't be true.
Yeah, yeah.
And they laugh at Bradley for his horrible cowardice. And then they say, soon we wouldn't be laughing. We would be dead.
Oh, there's also so many of that in this of like, I realize this would be the best day of my life. But then I would quickly realize it would not be.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, thing A would soon become a different thing, perhaps B.
I really cannot stress how much we are not exaggerating. That is just exactly how it's said. It does. I don't mean to Jonathan Rand. Rand? Jonathan? Is that his fucking name?
I don't know.
That feels backwards. But it does feel like sometimes like, oh, this would be if an algorithm wrote a book.
Yeah. To me, it feels like they're doing commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Cause like they kind of catch you up like at the start of the next chapter. And like, I know they're writing for a young audience that is like doing a little bit of reading and then being a kid with hopes and dreams and activities.
I don't think as a kid, those helped me. If the end of a chapter goes, like, one of them is, we're about to have our first encounter with a giant nightcrawler. Cool. Just, like, let's get to that. Like, let's just, don't tell me that. Just end it on a, you know, end it on Brittany going, what was that? And then, next chapter, let them encounter the nightcrawler. I don't know.
With this book, it also sort of has a quality of, like, dictated but not read. Like, a lot of it feels kind of like an oral, like, history kind of thing where like someone's just kind of like rattling off stuff as it comes to mind. Like R.L. Stein stuff is pretty stream of consciousness, but like this feels kind of like someone's doing a one-man show and taking a break to drink water and then coming back.
I would love to see someone do this on stage. This does, Kevin, I had not realized this. Is this like if we find out at the end of the book that we've kind of pulled out of the narration and this is Jim as an 80-year-old man in the future? And someone mentioned nightcrawlers, and he's like, nightcrawlers? Let me tell you about nightcrawlers.
Spotlight on stage.
Yeah, oh my god, I would watch the fuck out of a one-man show doing one of these books. That'd be so good.
All of these books transition into one another, like it's a chain of kids exchanging information about, like, paranormal stuff.
That is cool.
It does constrain how the stories are told, because they're all first-hand accounts. And because of that, we know everyone survives at the end.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the whole time. Yeah, or at least, even in the Goosebumps version, they at least contained some level of intelligence if they were transformed into something to write this story on a page.
Right. I don't think this is, from what we've seen, this is more like the monster horror genre, unless the body horror genre,
which I will
give Goosebumps props for getting into that kind of stuff of like, I'm turning into something horrible. Like this seems to want to get away from that and just be like, monsters are wrecking our shit.
Yeah, you're right. I would actually be surprised if any kids in these books perished.
Yeah. It'd be pretty neat. There are guns in this book, which we'll get to. But
okay, yeah. The guns in this. So you were setting it up. They've now heard the real screams of a teenager.
He comes out of the tree. They make fun of him. He goes away. Then they find the cave, which I think is a really interesting device that is underutilized in this.
Yeah.
They find a giant, like, school bus sized cave in the side of a berm, whatever that is.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was hoping you knew.
I should have looked it up, but I was like, it's probably just a hill.
Yeah, it's probably a Nebraskan term for a hill.
I'll look it up now. Hold on. A flat strip of land.
So there's a big hole in the flat strip of land.
Yeah, and they look in the cave and they hear something coming out of it, but it's just a dog. It's just a scared dog.
The most Goosebumps thing at all. I had the thought, and not to always reflect on these fake jump scares, but why is it always a dog? Like, it could be literally anything.
Kids love dogs.
I guess, yeah, unless you particularly need your cliffhanger to be like, and I saw a mouth of fangs and eyes staring back at me. Let it be anything. They don't do that in this one. It's just like, and then a thing came out. It was a dog. Have it be like, oh, hi, it's the mailman. Oh, I got lost. Do you know there's a hole here? Anyway, back to delivering the mail. Like, I don't know, just vary it up.
Here's my problem with it being a dog. There are only three houses around for miles. Whose dog is that?
Someone needs to take care of that dog.
Someone needs to put that dog in a house.
Yeah, I'm assuming the dog survived this encounter.
Oh, yeah. The dog's a survivor, for sure. Also, it's a German Shepherd. Those things are tanks.
Yeah, but he just went down like, oh, big old hole. Oh, I don't want to be in this hole anymore. He left.
Yeah, he's gone. He's out. They go back home being like, huh, that's weird. We'll check it out later. And they don't see the giant Nightcrawler. They go back home. Jim pays Brittany perhaps well for her labors. To me, it seems like she's getting paid half the profit, roughly.
More than that, which pretty good for most businesses.
Yeah. So that seems equitable and fair. And I like that we see him do math, and like, that's a nice. A lot of this feels like kind of like, can you throw like some math in there, or like maybe a little bit of science, or at least measuring?
Oh yeah. If you put enough math and science in here, we can put it on a higher shelf at the bookstore.
Yeah, there are all these like fan responses in the beginning of this book that's like, we read this in schools. They're like going on and on about how like they, you know, they had so much fun reading this in school. And it's like, oh, that's the market, is it's a Goosebumps that can be read in a school.
Not to judge too much, I don't think this is a very educational book. This is not how anything works. I don't know. I guess reading it all is good for kids, but.
Yeah, anything. Literally anything. Like, just let's encourage reading. Because, like, I didn't really become a reader until, you know, I started working on a podcast that made me read books. So here's my next problem with the book.
Yes.
Jim wakes up the next morning. And he says, the sun's shining, it's a beautiful day, time to set up the worms for the fishermen to buy. Now, I know very little about fishing.
Yes.
But I do know that you get ready before the sun has risen.
Ah, you're saying Jim has missed out on most of the market.
Yeah, they're already gone. Like, they're already on the lake if the sun is out and it's a beautiful day.
Jim needed to have an alarm go off at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
He needed to pour himself a cup of coffee and put on a trucker hat and like go out there and set up shop in the dark of night.
All right, now that you say all that, I realize now why they can't have the kid like not get a full night's sleep.
No, I'm not joking. That's what he needed to do. If he wants to take this business seriously... My dad made me go to a steel mill that started at 5 a.m.
Oh, God. Like, how old were you?
Oh, it was high school. But, like, I remember being like, this is awful. I'm going before the sun is up. Like, no one's on the road. This sucks.
Did you really work at a steel mill?
Yeah, one summer, my dad thought it'd be good for my career, like, to have career options to work at a steel mill. It was awful. And at one point, one of the guys working there, some nice blue collar people work in there. At one point, one of the guys found out that I was like, oh yeah, I'm planning on going to college next year. And he, like Billy Madison, he took me by the shoulders and was like, don't work here. Get out of here. Leave this place. I was like, okay. He was just very much like, don't let this be your job.
Holy shit.
So let's get to Mr. Flanagan. Let's get to the most interesting character in this whole thing.
All right. Yeah. So they go out looking for the giant worm, and Brittany walks over and she's like, hey, Jim, what's up? And he's like, I'm going to go look for the giant worm. And Brittany's like, oh, cool. Let me go tell my parents. And I'm like, what good kids these are, you know? Like, like everyone's so good. And they see a giant, they just... It's so abrupt and it's so poorly described. Like, there's so much weird about seeing a giant Nightcrawler, I imagine.
Yeah.
Like, what do its anus/mouth parts look like, scaled up?
I didn't want to know about its anus. I did want to know about its mouth.
Like, I feel like that's the easiest and coolest science lesson you could put in this book, is how clear the anatomy of a Nightcrawler looks now that it's been gigantified.
Because when you see a Nightcrawler from, you know, normal boy perspective,
yeah,
it looks like it ain't got no holes.
No, but you learn that it does. It's pretty much just a hole.
That's fucking wild.
Yeah, it's just a tube that stuff goes through.
This is like that question to piss off people: if a straw is a hole or a tube or whatever.
This is like that question that pisses off people: would you still love me if I was a giant worm?
I'll be honest, I'm trying to Google Nightcrawler mouth up close. It's hard to get a shot of a Nightcrawler mouth.
Yeah, I feel like this would have been a slam dunk for, like, you know, just teaching worm anatomy to children. But we weren't terribly interested in that. So they see a giant crawler and they flip out. And they run into the cornfields where they're pursued by the giant crawler. And then they meet Mr. Flanagan.
Good old Mr. Flanagan. He's a, I don't know if they immediately tell you, but he is a former high school science teacher.
Huge Breaking Bad energy.
Yeah. Decided to make his living being a corn farmer.
Yep.
And he is not immediately aware of the giant worms, right?
He's armed with the water balloons.
He already knew about it.
Yeah. So he knows about them. He also like takes the time to like diss, Jim's dad, which I think is really funny. Like, he's like, oh yeah, I had your father when I taught science. He was awful at science. And he's like, and Jim's like, really? My dad told me he got straight A's. And he's like, not in science. And I thought that was amazing. I think there's so much pressure on kids to be exemplary, and it's nice to see them reminded that you can be kind of bad at things and still be a person. Yeah.
There's also a very special relationship with a teacher when it is post you being taught by them and they no longer have any authority over you, where they can be very, very curt and blunt, that I find it's one of my favorite things. I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast, but one of my favorite things to ever happen when you're in high school is whenever you encounter one of your teachers in the wild. Like, like when I worked at Media Play, which is a retail store that's no longer around, rest in peace, Media Play. I remember working one night and going into the back, and there was like that kind of magazine section. There's a little couch out there where, like, if you really want to be one of those people, you can sit up there and just read magazines. You really shouldn't. But went back there just to clean. And, pick up all the Playboy mags that have been strung around that happened every night. And instead, I find my high school geography teacher just asleep on the couch. Like, his wife must have been there or something, but he was just fast asleep. And I thought I found a dead body for a moment.
Holy shit.
Yeah, still burned in my brain.
Overwhelming prank potential there.
I know. I respected him enough to let him. I'm just going to let him sleep.
If only you were a worse child.
Could have put a little Maxim magazine over his eyes so he could fall asleep. Get some shade.
Got him.
So Mr. Flanagan.
Mr. Flanagan is a fine character. He doesn't really... They never really explore his full mad scientist potential, I feel.
No, he should be, like, signed up by the government to make super weapons based on...
Yeah,
he has created two new inventions. One, a fertilizer that can turn presumably anything big, but he meant it to make the corn big.
Yeah, I think right now it's presumably anything it can turn big, but we learn later that it's just Nightcrawlers.
Yeah, I don't know why it targeted just Nightcrawlers. It's accidental. He didn't experiment on them or anything. Just
who knows how science works? Science doesn't have any rules.
Yeah, this would be a good place to put in like a... worm term, like a it's Theranix. It must have had a reaction to that, and then you could have a diagram of a worm and then like put that in science class.
Not enough worm terms. Yeah, we learn about the super fertilizer, and we learn that there are giant night crawlers crawling around during the day. All this takes place during the day, which is also a huge misstep.
Yeah, they mentioned at one point like a curiosity that they're out during the day. Huh. It's not even like a clue for later or anything, right? It's just during the day.
Didn't have to be that way. You're in control of the story, but you know.
In fact, actually, most of the night in this book is just kind of quiet times of thinking about business.
Yep. And I love how Mr. Flanagan says, or the kids say to Mr. Flanagan, "Have you called the cops or anything?" And they're like, "Ah, the cops thought I was lying." And I was like, "Yeah, man, cops won't help you."
Yeah. Oh, the cops. Oh, I love the way the cops are portrayed in this. And Mr. Flanagan is also a genius, has already developed a special anti-grow.
Yes.
Shrink serum.
Yep.
Made of what I believe is, quote, powder and water.
Yep. Just powder and water, and very specific measurements of powder plus water in a water balloon.
Oh, yeah. Up to at one point, they make it with him, and it says up to 33 different powders with names I couldn't pronounce. Just put like a couple in there for me. Just give me a couple.
Yeah. It's reverse cocaine. It's cocaine that makes you really like small and tired.
That's the other crop that Flanagan was growing that he didn't want them to know about.
Yeah, he's growing reverse cocaine.
Flanagan is already equipped with, I believe, a squirt gun at this point.
Water balloons. We don't get the squirt gun until later.
I don't know why I thought he came out ripped like Rambo with a squirt gun. Yeah, he has water balloons. I think it's funny for some reason that this lonely adult farmer just has a massive surplus of water balloons in his house.
Well, this was the cool part about like the Fear Street movies too, was when like super soakers and water balloons and shit became like, you know, holy weapons and shit like that. I love it when kid weapons become powerful weapons.
Oh, totally. Lost Boys. And yeah, I feel like half the Troll Hunters episodes I worked on were just like, can we have the kids make stuff out of their toys?
Zombies Ate My Neighbors, that sort of thing.
Oh, man, what a good game.
Yeah, man.
But yeah, he's like, Mr. Flanagan's like, come with me if you want to live. Yep. Take a water balloon. And let's get to making water balloons.
Yeah, but then they see Brad and Kevin riding up towards them. And they're like, what are Brad and Kevin doing? They're going really fast. And then in what's described as a tornado of horror, a hole opens up beneath Brad and Kevin as they're frantically riding away. And two giant night crawlers spring out of them and start really like menacing the teenagers. Brad draws aggro by throwing rocks at one, and like they're trading aggro and dodging as best they can, but it doesn't look good. But luckily, Brittany plays softball and has the perfect arm. She has the She has the throw that never misses. She is known as the god of softball in some circles.
And this is her calling to exterminate or shrink giant nightcrawlers.
Yeah, and she just blam blam. She's the muscle in this friendship. Like Jim gets a few hits in later on. I think he might get the other one, but like Brittany's like from like downtown, just like lobbing these things.
Oh, there are multiple times in this book where like a SWAT team calling out their shots. They yeah. will like you're playing XCOM. They will have every person go, all right, I'm going to hit that one on the right.
I thought that was really cool too. Yeah. Cause like the balloons are such a limited resource. They have to like call their shots. And when there's like suddenly an army of Nightcrawlers, spoiler alert, like they do have to be like, okay, well we gotta figure this out. We gotta do volleys correctly.
Actually, a major part of this book is just sort of resource management, like a survival horror game. I found this annoying when I read it in the book, but to talk about it with you, Kevin, I liked it more. Just this, we got four water balloons left. Can we get across the driveway in time to get more water balloons? Got the water balloons. Let's put them in a wheelbarrow and get them into the house and put them on the couch. Oh, but wait, what if we put it on the hose? Okay, let's take three of those balloons and use them to escort us back to the hose. Like, there's just a lot of, I don't think educational.
Yeah.
Almost like logic problem of like, how many can we take? Oh, no.
This feels like, this definitely feels like a decade shift away from like Goosebumps, because like this is drawing on zombie movies and like Dawn of the Dead and stuff like that, where there are those like resource moments, like we found a cache of weapons or whatever, like stuff that's like really really common in zombie storytelling today. But like RL's pulling more from like Twilight Zone and like 1950s movies of like communism is scary, like he's not so much pulling from like, you know, Gen Xer, like, beloved gory horror movies.
Well, yeah, and also the threat of this, of these giant nightcrawlers, are interesting. They established that, like, oh, you know, these things could just flatten us like pancakes instantly.
Yeah.
Or maybe they would eat us. It's never really clear if the Nightcrawlers are malicious, it seems like they're just worms.
Yeah, they're kind of aggressive, but they're also really stupid, and they don't really do much. Like, they'll go towards stimulus. And Flanagan says, like, one of the things that the serum does is it makes them more aggressive. Like, they're more sure. likely to charge towards something than run away from it. So, that's interesting. The Nightcrawlers also eat a lot of other shit. I think they're trying to cover up for the fact that a giant worm would still just kind of behave like a worm and not bother much about
it. Yeah, at one point the worms eats like a statue, and I'm like, I don't think a worm could digest that. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Could a mega worm do it?
I guess. I don't Perhaps. Know. Like, if it was like a tiny rock, would a worm eat a tiny cement rock? Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know about worms. I wish this book taught me a little bit about
worms. I wish Mr. Flanagan was like, oh no, it's processing the ceramic statue in its three stomachs.
I just think this is lacking worm terms in general, you know?
He really is, and needs more worm terms.
Like, it's kind of fucked up when you do, and this is why RL stuck with, you know, the supernatural and not the semi-plausible. Like, it's fucked up when there is information. Like, you could talk to a worm expert and get some good stuff, but they don't, because that would take up time, and they're on a very tight deadline to make this book. So, like, RL's not going to talk to a werewolf expert, and he shouldn't. He should make up something cool about werewolves. But, like, Nightcrawlers are real, and, like, you could potentially talk to somebody whose whole life is about Nightcrawlers, and they might have something interesting to tell you.
Yeah, you know, another missed opportunity. I feel like, what are the few things you know about worms? They come up when it's wet, right?
Oh,
when
yeah, it rains. Yeah.
And then also, I think these are Nightcrawlers, or maybe they're earthworms. You can cut them in half. You shouldn't. That's barbaric and cruel.
Right.
You can cut them in half, and they keep living, or I think become two new worms.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Like, that feels like for a horror book of, like, these things becoming bigger, you could have had a, like, yeah, and then we ran the thresher through the big one, and hooray, we stopped it. Oh, no, now there's two worms, and they're really pissed.
Yeah, like, if this had a Netflix adaptation where it could be gorier and, like, more adult or something like that, I think that would be the first thing they add. And I would bet it was probably in the original design, like, doc for this, that they're like, we want them to cut the worms in half. But there's very explicit language in this part we're at right now where, like, they throw rocks at the worms, but the rocks don't hurt the worms. And the serum balloons, like, don't hurt the worms either. They just shrink them back down into regular sized worms.
They shrink so fast.
Yep.
It's not even like, oh, give them a little time, they'll shrink down. They are, before my eyes, tiny.
So Brad and Kevin are saved because their worms are shrunk down real small. And they ride home like cowards, and Jim and Britt go and help Flanagan. We learn Flanagan's phone is dead, so we can't call for help, even though
the worms have cut the lines,
yeah.
He says.
They've adapted. they make some more serum balloons and put them in a bucket, and then Brad and Kev are under assault again. And oh no, this is the rock there. Whatever, I mixed up some.
Yeah, there's a really a lot of back and forth in this middle part of the book. Again, not calling it padding, but there's a lot of Brad and Kevin come back. No one believed us. Okay,
yeah.
Let's run to the house. Quick, can you run over there? All right, we'll run over. Like, it is very much, it kind of just blurs together.
Yeah, it's hard to keep track of where everyone is at all times because the main group kind of splinters off. Brad and Kevin are hard to keep in one place for any amount of time.
Well, they got those bikes. They got a ride.
So, yeah, they save Brad and Kevin. Kevin just leaves. Kevin bikes into town. They, like, watch him for a really long time. As he bikes away like a coward.
In a good movie, they would have watched, it would have been like a long shot of watching him go down the street, and then the very, like, last moment was like, I think he's going to make it. An earthworm just comes out of the ground and just, like, eats him.
That'd be incredible. Oh, yeah, no one dies from the earthworms, which is kind of lame, but
whatever. Not a single person is eaten by a worm, and then we get a fun inside the worm shot.
I was in the worm,
I saw all of its stomachs. Did you know that the dirt of it is processed at the bottom of their butts?
That'd be a great worm term, a good worm fact for us all.
I know. By the way, at one point, Flanagan. Yeah, Flanagan corrects. They're not worms. They're Nightcrawlers.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to call them worms.
But I'm like, they're worms, dude.
Yeah. A Nightcrawler is a type of worm.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We all agree.
Spiders are bugs.
If it's not scientifically true, it's emotionally true.
Yeah.
My, like, another weird thing that I guess they have to do because it's a children's book, but there aren't any freaks going out trying to get eaten, trying to get vored by a worm.
There would have been just at least in that. Yeah. At least someone in town is like, oh, this is what I've always wanted.
We know scientifically that 3% of the population would jump into a worm to get vored.
Yeah. If you could put me, I'm trying to think, like, I don't want to get vored. I'm not into vore, but I'm just wondering if, like, if you could put me in the equivalent of, like, a shark cage.
Yeah.
Right? Like, or, you know, that those giant balls that American Gladiators rolled around in and that one contest.
Yeah.
With, like, an oxygen tube and, like, I'm hermetically sealed in there, so I'm not going to get any gross goo.
Mm-hmm.
And just some lights. I'd be like, I'll go through there. Let me see what it's like.
Yeah, that's an educational journey. That's a, that's a magic school bus.
That's a school bus. Eat vored by a worm.
Get vored by a big old worm. Look at that worm's insides from the insides.
Can we get to the part where the kids get to Flanagan's special container of magic science potion?
Okay, yeah. Okay, so Kevin leaves. No one believes us. There are 4 more crawlers. Bradley misses a whole bunch. Bradley just can't hit anything for shit with his water balloons. He's the worst at throwing shit.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to be an arc. Like, I thought Bradley's cowardice and the terrible throwing ability would be brought back as, like, Bradley gets his one heroic moment.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
No, he's really just the butt monkey of the book.
Yeah, he just sucks and is bad, and that's it. Which is fine. You can have characters who just suck and are bad. And if it's an older brother, then yay. Yeah, all right, cool. But then Trooper Fraser shows up. They finally get the attention of a cop, and they try to prove to the cop that giant night crawlers are around. And he says, I don't see any of them. They're like, we don't have any proof, but here's my car that was crushed. He's like, that car could have been crushed by anything. You guys are stupid. I hate you.
Yeah, also, I'm not going to wonder where the thing that crushed it was.
I'm not curious. I have people to help. You're wasting everyone's time, and you're killing people. says the cop. And then,
in fact, you're all going to jail, he says.
Yeah, you're all going to jail. He gets in his car to bring the jail to them, to put them in the jail, and then bring the jail back to where the jail is. But as soon as he gets in his car, a big worm hits him, and he's like, oh my god, worms are real. Then he's on the team.
He's on the team. This is the most unbelievable part of this, is after the cop is on the team, they process that he has a gun. Like, he holsters his gun.
Yeah.
And Jim is like, oh my god, could you use the gun on the worm? And he's like, probably wouldn't work. Puts his gun away. You telling me, not to get too political, you telling me a cop is going to not only not jump at the chance to use his gun, not jump at the chance to just unload his gun into a, like, emotionless giant worm? That's gotta be the best time to ever use a gun.
I mean, the gun won't do anything because it's meant to kill people-sized people or smaller. But
they're not bulletproof. It could still probably, like, give them an infection or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there would be anything that could infect the worm because, like, I don't know if anything could survive in its system. Like, it would take, like, a microbe a long time to get used to the new biology of the worm. So I think, I don't know. I don't think you could infect the worm. Maybe you could infect the worm.
I mean, those troopers in Starship Troopers were really just firing wildly bullets into bugs. It seemed like,
yeah, but
they got the job done eventually.
They had assault rifles, Chad. This is just a Glock.
Okay. Sure. It's a real, again, kid's book, just a real waste to have a cop going, like, Trooper Fraser, his name is, to not fire a gun at a worm.
It is a little bit of a waste. And what's also a waste is they try to make more balloons, and they put them all in a wheelbarrow, and the wheelbarrow falls over and all the balloons go everywhere.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
Really frustrating. Kind of a big waste of time. As far as
so much of the page making balloons.
Yeah. I kind of like it, though. It's a nice kind of setback, I guess. There's nothing that's really scary about this book. But, like, the fact that suddenly they're less safe than they once were feels like it's horror adjacent.
Yeah, the only part that really, really hits is a moment later, they have the great idea to, well, let's hook up a hose.
Yeah.
And create a, they get, this is the most science they get. We could work up like a bike pump and create pressure on the hose to be able to shoot it far enough to hit all the earthworms. Like, you're kind of wasting a lot of water by doing that.
Yeah, but they're surrounded by like 50 giant night crawlers, and they put together essentially a giant super soaker with the bike pump. And that's cool because Mr. Flanagan uses it like a chain gun in Doom to just mow down
night crawlers.
And I'm like, this book is great. You know, there have been a few missteps so far, but this is kind of like the last high point of the book.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned.
And this is about, what, halfway through it? Well, 2/3.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the first escalate. It's the first, like, weapon escalation, which is cool. But, yeah, like you said, the super soaker, the super soaker, the mega soaker, if you will.
Yeah.
Is very wasteful, and they're already out of serum. So they have to go back to water balloons to survive. To get the rest of like the 16 worms out of the 50 they didn't get.
Yeah.
And Jim almost dies, but the turnaround is way too quick because Brittany is right there with like the shot out of nowhere, which she does a lot. Like, Brittany is just unstoppable.
Brittany is the hero of this book.
Yeah, in a horror book, you gotta like she would die if this was a zombie story. Like, she's the most capable character, so like,
oh sure,
you got to take her out of the equation for like them to, you know, have their lowest point.
But also, yeah, in terms of even stakes, like, it's kind of anticlimactic that they just we'll just make some more potion, let's go make some more like it really should be like, when they run out of water in the tank, they don't have time to make more, it's going to take, but instead I don't know, it's like a It's like too easy for them,
yeah.
Right? The next thing that happens is, I don't remember how they show up, but the fire department shows up.
Okay, yeah. They learn that their parents went to town. That takes a whole chunk of the book that we can just skip over. They learn their parents went to town, and Bradley just goes home at this point. He's just like, I'm done. I'm going home.
I'm going to go lay in my bed and close the blinds.
Flanagan's like, let's go to my basement lab. Let's whip up some more potion. And they hear a fire truck coming for them. Because Trooper Dumbass, whatever his name is, the cop goes to Jim's house and calls the fire department.
Right.
He also learns, oh shit, Denton is under attack. So the fire truck comes to Flanagan's house and they make more serum. They put the serum in the fire truck's internal water supply of 500 gallons. And so...
Yeah.
And then the fire truck leaves. So we don't even get to see that, which is...
I know, right? Like, this at least should be the escalation of, like, and the kids get to sit in the back of the truck and they get to fire the hose.
Yeah. Like, you don't even let the kids ride in the fire truck until the next truck shows up, which is an unnecessary complication. And when the next truck shows up, a worm hits it, obviously, and a fireman twists his fragile fireman ankle.
Oh my god, he twists his ankle. It was such a not interesting injury.
And I'm like, okay, now we get to go in the fire truck. And we go in the fire truck and we ride around Denton for like 10 minutes and nothing happens. It's all very like, and then we fire hosed all of the worms in Denton, but we didn't see our parents.
Okay. Was that exciting at least?
Yeah. Shouldn't this be like the big escalation part? Like, we've gone from like water balloons to super soaker to fire truck. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Like, one of the night crawlers like bursts out of the road. And now the fire truck is like starting to fall down into a massive tunnel below. And they got to like hit the reverse on the truck to like back it out in time, or they're going to fall into a pit. I don't know, just spitballing some...
Or they meet a Nightcrawler King, which is a bunch of Nightcrawlers that have fused together.
Like a Rat King, but yeah, they're all just tangled. That'd be so cool, Kevin.
Yeah, it's like Katamari-ing around the entire city, and they got it's chasing them, and they got to turn the fire around.
It looks like one of those koosh balls you get, and it's just Nightcrawler.
But none of that happens. It's just like a really, like glanced over part where, like, they go to town, they don't find their parents. And they go home, and they get a call, and it's their parents, and they want to go pick up their parents, but the truck is destroyed. So they walk to it, and they encounter one last Nightcrawler, and they throw water balloons at it, but they don't work. And they're like, oh shit, they don't work. But Jim realizes, because Jim's the main character, Jim realizes it's because that the serum needs 5 minutes in order to fully work, because the scientist had said that before. So
yeah.
They just kind of outrun it for 5 minutes, and then they hit it again and it dies. And that's the climax.
Yeah.
What it's the not, fuck?
It it's strange to have that be the final encounter, the one last Nightcrawler.
This is called Nightcrawlers of Nebraska, and it all takes place in the daylight, and the majority of it takes place above ground. Like,
yeah.
I think it's a big misstep to not have them, like, we gotta go in the tunnels and, like, get rid of the Nightcrawler nest or something like
they're,
that.
They're barely in the, I think they're in the tunnels for 2 pages?
Yeah.
They're in the tunnels, and there's not even a worm. They just worry about what would happen if a worm came.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we found a hole. We got out.
That'd be a great place to, like, separate the group or something like that. Like, take Brittany out of the equation and have Jim have to, like, survive on his own or, like...
Or, like, Brittany breaks her arm so she can't throw anymore. Yeah. I don't know.
Or, like, and, like, Bradley shows up to redeem himself or something because he did, like... As far as, like, asshole, like, 14-year-old shit, he just kind of lightly scared a couple of kids and then was kind of cool and left.
They're kind of dealing with all of this pretty rationally through the book.
Yeah, and, like, things clean themselves up really fast. No one's mad at Flanagan.
there was one line, he's like, it's all my fault, and the cop goes like, don't worry about it.
Don't beat yourself up.
It's fine.
A news crew shows up at Jim's house and they give an interview. And then, like, Jim and Brittany's parents all have a cookout together. Like, you can't sing fucking Yub Nub if you haven't destroyed a fucking Death Star, all right? Like, it made me so mad. I'm like, wait, that's it? Wait, that's
it? You haven't earned your Yub Nub yet.
They did not earn... hot dogs and hamburgers. I'm sorry. You have to destroy a Death Star first.
I mean, also, they kind of just don't worry about other Nightcrawlers they didn't hit, right?
Yeah, they're kind of like, yeah, that's probably all of them. And, like, you know, you could do, like, a cloud seeding thing. Like, you know how Nightcrawlers come out in the rain? Like, maybe, like, the solution is to, like, get the serum into the like, rainwater
really cool,
or something
Kevin.
Like that.
I like that. We all have to drink the serum.
Yeah. Or, yeah, someone drinks the serum and gets vored by a Nightcrawler in order to stop it.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
I don't know.
Like, I know you came in pretty hot on this book, and I was feeling good about it, but kind of... It, for some reason, it was just really not excited about what they were doing in the story.
I think I could see the potential in this book and the setup a little bit more. It's cool to have a zombie story done in this style for kids. I don't really like the generic zombie story template. I kind of grew tired of it pretty fast.
Sure, yeah.
I think this is... an interesting version of it that has potential, but not within the deadline that this book had.
No, I mean, this could be, you say zombie, I think it's a fair comparison. I would reference the one that works that I think I saw as a kid, Tremors, right? Like, yeah. Just graboids are actually, even if they look silly as hell, are kind of scary. And, like, the threat of them always being below you and, I don't know, like them bursting into basements because you realize you think you're safe in the basement, but you're not. You're just kind of in a death trap for worms. Like, that stuff's really cool, and this book didn't really capitalize on any of that.
Yeah, I think if I was a kid, I was lame as shit, so I'd probably like this a lot better than Goosebumps, just because, I don't know, the happy ending probably would have hit me a little bit more, but now I kind of appreciate RL's, like, you know, his endings are bad, but sometimes there are consequences. Like, sometimes things don't end happy. Or they end on, like, a cruel joke or something like that. And that has a little bit more of an interesting vibe than hamburgers and hot dogs. Oh, and we tuned the serum, so now that Nightcrawlers just grow twice as big. So Jim's already successful business can now up the price to $1.50 per dozen.
Also, I mean, let's not even talk about how they almost solved the food crisis problem for the world, but it seems like it was just made to make Nightcrawlers a little bit bigger.
I mean, you could solve the food crisis world if people just ate giant Nightcrawler steaks.
Oh my god, that's the key. Dude, well, listen, let's be honest. In a couple of years, we're all going to be Dave Bautista in Blade Runner 2049. We're all going to be just eating grubs. So let's get into it.
Eating gawk.
Ugh. Ugh, I'm going to hate it. I hate it so much already.
I don't know, man. I don't like eating sea bugs, which everyone seems to enjoy in my home state.
Are you calling lobsters and crabs sea bugs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like. I'm not about that life, but I might eat a land bug one of these days. I don't know.
I could, if they were the bugs, if the bugs were like the ones from Lion King that they ate, I could maybe get into that.
You deep fry anything and give me like a tonkatsu sauce or something. I'll try.
Oh yeah. I think I'm just going to have to, you're going to have to just bread them.
Yep. Bread them, fry them, give them a good sauce.
I hope we have bread in the future.
Oh man, that'd be amazing, but don't count on it. And the book kind of ends with a tie-in for the next one that takes place in Arizona, but I'm not really about that life, honestly. Did you read it? I didn't. I was like,
No. I actually scrolled ahead a couple pages and I was like, wait, what's going on? There's robots now? And I was like, oh, this has got interesting. Oh, it's the teaser for the next chapter.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I like the device of this is passed from kid to kid through like the kid like underground social media network or whatever, but it's, you know, it's whatever. It is.
No, I'm with you. Overall, a fun read, some missed opportunities.
Yeah,
Kevin, I enjoyed covering it with you.
Oh, I enjoyed covering it with you too. I'd say like this is kind of a sideways thumb for both of us.
Yeah,
a smooth. But like, if you've been reading like along with us, which I hope none of you are, but if you have been reading along with us, this one's a good shakeup, I think, a little bit. I am still intrigued by the Michigan Chillers and the American Chillers series. Like, this doesn't turn me off from the whole production. Like, I super want to read the ones for like our states.
Yeah, there's like Iron Bugs of Indiana or something. You're talking about like nanomachines? Is yeah. That what you're talking about?
Yeah. Or the X-Files episode with the cockroaches, War of the Copperphages, where they're like they're metal bugs from space.
Oh, I don't know if I've seen that one yet.
Oh man, that's like one of my favorite episodes.
That's not the one in the cabin with the cabin bugs.
No, that's the one where there's like a romance like plot underneath War of the Copperphages. It's a silly one. Like, it's a good silly X-Files.
Cool. Yeah. All right, I'll check that one out.
Yeah, if you want a good bug story, War of the Copperphages. Basically, like, all my favorite X-Files are the silly ones, and they're written by the same guy who didn't really go on to, I think he did the X-Files spinoff. That was like the
Lone Gunman.
Lone Gunman, yeah.
Oh, sick.
I don't know what else he did, but yeah, that's Nebraska Nightcrawlers.
Nebraska Nightcrawlers. Listen, we'll see what we do next. As we talked about in the last episode, we are preparing to dive into the new series of Goosebumps. We're going to tackle some Fear Street. We're going to tackle some Horrorland. And Paul will be back to join us for those as well. Hope you enjoyed this detour into Nebraska. Kevin, do you have any news on Kevin in Kevin's world that we should share?
If you want to play some games, feel free to check out supertry.itch.io if you want to play some fun free video games.
Give kevinmoney.com.
Yeah. Oh, also maybe check out Heart Cannon. I've been uploading episodes of my podcast that I made in 2020 and 2021, Heart Cannon, that's being made public for the first time. You can check that out by going to, I think, heartcannon.libsyn.com. Cannon spelt C-A-N-O-N. Yeah, heartcannon.libsyn.com, or just type Heart Cannon Podcast into your search bar. You'll probably find it somewhere. But yeah, we're about halfway through. There's six episodes up at the time I'm saying this into a microphone. And I'm putting out an episode from the 12-episode run every week. And I'd like to start the podcast up again. And if you want to support that happening, maybe check out givekevinmoney.com, because the whole podcast started as a thing I wanted to do for my patrons, so... If I get some more support on Patreon, I'll have more time that I can spend making random cool stuff with my friends. So
maybe everyone should check it out. Paul's episode's up there. Mine's coming down the pipe at some point.
Yeah, yeah. You're the first episode of season two.
Can't wait. I was on a friend's podcast, friend of the show, Kyle McVeigh, has a new one called Yesterday's Tomorrow Today.
Ooh.
With co-host Joey Ryanish. They are covering, it's a fun premise. It's a talking about fictional futures from movies in the past. So, for example, you know, RoboCop's version of the future, Demolition Man's version of the future.
Oh.
I was on to discuss The Purge, which was covering a idea of the near future that is now the past because that movie's been out so long enough. And
oh, wow, you're right.
It's kind of weird to think about that. But thinking about, like, you know, it's really a great premise to talk about, like, how would these worlds work? What would be the nuance of it? I think The Purge, I've only seen the first one, but I think it is both a surprisingly brilliant movie concept and also incredibly dumb. And if you think about it for more than 10 seconds, it starts to fall apart, but it's fun to riff on and imagine what you would actually do in The Purge besides just murdering people.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what your take on that is, because I feel like you've obviously explored the depths of Purge philosophy on Goosebuds. So we should inject a little more Purge talk.
Yeah, you know, it's been a long time since we talked about The Calling on Goosebuds. Maybe it's time to get back into it. I'll tell you my one, just an example of the many problems of The Purge. How do fucking time zones work? All right, like, what are we doing?
Oh, because it starts, I see.
It starts at a certain hour, and, like, are you telling me that if I murder someone, like, 2 minutes after The Purge ends, you guys are going to arrest me? Like, it's just one of those hard, concrete rules that just seems like it's going to be really, really exploited and not taken
away. Well, I've long been a proponent of we should abolish time zones.
I also, Kevin, one universal time for everyone, and yeah. If midnight for you just happens to be 7, you call it 0700?
Yeah.
Sorry, you just got to learn to live with it. Yeah. Like, that's just what it is.
I think that's fine. I don't think that will require Kevin. Too much of a shift. We'll stop saying 9 to 5, but whatever.
I'm with you. So check that out. It's Yesterday's Tomorrow Today. They just launched as a podcast. You can find it on most services, including YouTube. Check that out. Give us some love and let them know that Goosebud sent you. If you want to support this show and get access to our Camp Goosebuds, which are our monthly bonus episodes, get to weigh on what we're reading next, join our exclusive Discord with a really amazing community of Goosebuddies, you can go to patreon.com/goosebuds, pledge your support to the show. It keeps the lights on and allows us to make this project for you all.
Yeah, please go there.
All right, I think that's bit of Goosebuds. I'm gonna go load up Baldur's Gate and think about my character's genitals.
I'm gonna go load up the in-browser Baldur's Gate character creator and make a few characters that I'll never play.
That's very real. Till next time. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
This beautiful show is brought to you by our Patreon supporters, of which you can become one and join the Book of Names.
The Book of Names?
Book Names.
Book of Names. First, we have the highest name and the highest honor in the Book of Names, Stefan Jive Turkey Kuwabara.
Hollis Hornbeak.
Hey, Low Belly, hate me.
Cameron Murphy Audio.
Michael McDowell.
Hey, Josh Robb.
Mickey C.
Nathan Dolezal.
Mike Lanteri.
Buddy Morrill.
Alcade.
Mel Dipson.
Afshin.
Dango Twist.
Zenticles pours their cup onto the ice church floor. Yes.
What's in that cup?
Is it cold? It should build up ice, I say.
It was a cup of lava, you fools.
Straight to the core.
Please let us know which way your cup pours, Booknamers.
What temperature? How it burns.
Yeah, is it lava? Is it ice lava? Tell us.
Nesquik.
Stealth Bates, which way does your cup turn?
Robert Moon!
It's not really about the direction of the cup turning, it's about the temperature of the
cup.
If
it turns upwards, there ain't nothing pouring out of it.
Well, that's true. That's very true. Jason Crooker.
Clay Castle.
Miguel Pardo, turn your cup.
John Keaty.
Calf, turn thy cup.
Justice for Paranoia Shop content.
You do not get
points.
A cup.
It's okay. The podcast exists online somewhere. You can go listen to it.
It's always there.
It's always there. The Juggalobalist.
Gregory D. Warren.
Alan Saylor.
Cody Redfield.
Bradford Coulter.
Aiden pledges their hammer to Dwarf Daddy Kevin. Thank you, Dwarven Child.
Jar Jar Slinks thinks this podcast is great, sir.
Chosen One pledges his cadre of musketeers to House Kevin. No thank you, Chosen One.
Thank you, Musketeer Children. Levi Fan.
Up and champ. I heard a cat.
Jonas Engman wasn't my cat. Wasn't my cat.
It's my cat who's yelling at me for some reason. She's trying to say Carl.
Anthony Mulberry.
The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Elusive Koala.
Yanni Markovina.
Brooke X.
Bezos Christo, a.k.a. Jesus Christ.
Christian Van Skeever. Christ in both of those.
Drew Applegate. The apple is also big in the Bible.
There's a lot of Christ in this podcast. Jeremy Lowe.
Brian Hobgood.
Zach Connor wrote a secret Bible that nobody talks about.
Patreon _ donator, cameo. Yeah, improv.
Joe Spooky Digital Ghost Tierney.
Tom Widom.
Andrew Jadzak wonders if it is Michael and Terry, Michael and Terry, or Michael and Terry.
That's easier to read than to say.
I think I did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you did great. No, yeah.
Tell me with your names if you understood that last name.
It's easier to read than to hear.
Mm-hmm. Lord Cornwallis.
Carson Birkenbean.
Murphep.
Alicia Grave.
Sean Minogue.
Rushy Glenn.
Wiggle it!
Luke LaFountain. Do not turn that fountain on in Ice Church.
Chip Hansen.
Matt McClellan.
Tanya Turtle.
Juan Jalapeno.
Jonas Blutterman.
Keith Halcrow.
Timothy Misa Delacis.
Clay McCarty.
Parker Lee.
Ham _boat.
Raymond Hernandez.
The Crowfans, but seasonal.
Ah, Matthew Sutton.
Paul Grasso.
Jeffrey Owen Cawhey.
Joe, regular name Scott.
Alex Moon, the robotic Doug.
Kelsey Kinneman.
Russell Kasberg.
Javier Jimenez.
Chris Putrakis, one of my favorite names to say because it's different than a name I normally say.
Scotty Pippen, the name that's the same as another good name.
Dungeon Kappa.
Luke Noodles.
Ice Acolyte Hamster.
Oh, boo. Boo, I love you, a boo.
Wait, why are you booing? They love the ice.
We don't know which way they acolyte the ice. They're just a small hamster.
I feel like if you're an acolyte for ice, you're pro ice.
I just think you keep an eye on the ice.
I think we're starting Hot Church.
What the fuck? Don't you fucking split from Ice Church.
I think schism time.
Oh my god. A bunch of Martin Luthers in here. Zach Weir.
Limp Duck.
Gonna nail a piece of American cheese on the door of the Ice Church. Hugh Boland.
American cheese?
This is funny. A piece of American cheese nailed it to a church. Like that's your...
Like it's like a...
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's your 95 theses or whatever.
It's more of a visual joke.
No, that's good. I like it. Sam Bambino.
Tobias Clark.
Meet Virginia.
Nathan Remick.
Need more kimchi.
Estamina, Lord of Paul's Pants.
Chris Hard Penis and Sleep Clothes Nelson.
So glad we got another dip of hard penis.
Me too. Me too, man. Another month of hard penis.
Mm-hmm. Thank Christ.
Techie Tammy.
Leewood.
Streak.
Joey Evans.
Kieran McNamara.
Diet Soda.
Carewise Gamgee.
Jackie Ledoux.
Coleman Laguza.
Lamb, the aspiring demon of Lord of Friendship.
Wow.
Lamb came out with a new title.
Lamb upgrade. A wild, swaggy YOLO squire appears.
Throw a ball at it. Cameron Hansen.
A pair of Scots.
Levi Kidder.
David Gray.
Generally depressing.
The Deadly Bulb.
Bryce Dieri.
Matthew Brotato.
Ben Bohan.
Carbson.
I am Cornholio, and I need teepee for my bunghole.
Thank you for informing us of your needs, Cornholio. Hello, this is Real Paul. I'm trapped in a mirror world. Help!
That was a lie.
You said it, Real Paul.
Bodie!
Anthony needs to know if Ice Church supports trans rights or if it's lame like regular church. I think you know the answer to this. Obviously trans rights for Ice Church.
Yay, trans rights, yay.
But also, I'm worried about the demon coming out of the ice and hurting trans
that
people.
That demon so is going to be so pro-trans rights, it's going to turn all other churches pro-trans rights.
Okay, all right,
open
fine.
The ice. Yeah. Hashtag open the ice.
So it's funny because rights. Martin Luther nailed a piece of paper onto the church. And in my head, it's even funnier if it was just a piece of American cheese, which is the same shape as a piece of paper.
Same color.
I need that whole big piece of cheese. Oh, that's such a big piece of cheese. It's already yeah. 95.
Can you imagine 8.5 by 11 American cheese?
Oh my God. Can you imagine a blanket of American cheese?
You should do 95 slices of it so Chad can make 95 peanut butter and cheese sandwiches.
Jonas and Avoldson.
Some of Chad's bird friends, we pledge our talons and sharpened beaks to Chad. Caca.
Joe Gorman, also caca.
Burger's blissful anti-spiral manifesting. Your drill is the drill that'll pierce the heavens.
Calamity Carl.
Germ Juice.
Eric Horwitz.
Tiffany Lee.
Nick Johnson.
Thomas Jansis.
Lucretia McEvil.
Mutant Astronaut.
Henry Torbert.
Boner Guard Epsilon Hamilton, a.k.a. Hambone, host of Radio Bonaire.
Oh, now, see, now we have lore.
That's how it works.
Adam Knapp.
Ryan Carroll.
Jeremy Bowser.
Megan McCormick Mason.
Logan Derby.
Brad Schmelzer.
Chick.
Ninja Breadman.
Plush.
Hello to Kiss Frenchland.
Aaron Lord.
Callum Mr. Misfire West.
Mandy Nasty.
Skulletorin.
Dr. Chocula pledges every claw and fang under his command to Paul.
To the ice, brethren.
Crow.
Yoplin.
Philip Reynolds.
Robot Arena.
Nate Bitchy.
Mr. Unimportant pledges this cool Rocky found to whoever last trimmed their beard. It was Chad.
Last week. Because I'm the only one. I get a cool rock.
Chad, you deserve it.
Well, thank you.
Good for you, Chad.
I'll have a fine supper tonight. Ryan R. Davis.
Scott Wabel.
SSJ Trogdor.
Rocco!
Josh Howe no longer pledges his zealotry as it has been mocked. No zealotry for anyone. You're not over it yet, Josh. Come on. He's digging in.
Evan Bowen.
I don't really build that up. Lava Lad.
Mike Spaghetti Jones.
Greg Musto.
Chris.
Hi, first time, long time.
Allie Rose.
Sprinkle Buns.
Sean Astin masters the Gundam Death Scythe Hell Amber by 311 AMV.
Damn, Paul, you do that the best. Hilda B.
Soggy Newspapers.
Chris Kulik.
Dakota Kemp.
John W.
Liam Rogers.
Ollie Sutz.
Kate the Great.
Mike Hart.
Saturn Video.
Kiwi of Lerv.
Serial Killer X.
Wade Norcross.
Cassandra Harris.
Gulliver.
That last name was my favorite.
That's a nice one. Tip your bartender. Be nice to your name neighbor.
Big Nick Lane.
Kira and Brian are big fans.
Kit Bush.
Sirison.
Blake Cavan. Cavan?
I think Cavan.
Wasn't it Blake? Bad time happened, Cavan?
He took the training wheels off once.
And I crashed. I crashed instantly.
Dennis Wright.
Over the moon.
Dan Antonio.
Cameron Gonzeveld.
Several upset horses. Jesus.
Someone get them some apples.
Let them run.
Let them free. Matt Scepter.
Gregor Vasi, a.k.a. Vitizen.
Farah Tilda.
Here. Harry. CM.
Paul's Wang does its thing to Sonic's last golden ring. Tonight at 11. Dun-dun.
Damn. Fuck the last golden ring? How's Not Whole Village going to survive?
It's going to get fucked too.
Oh my God. Anthony Rodriguez.
B.
Jesse.
Chris Curto.
Cole Gleason.
Jeff Webb is still a big baby, but we both sincerely appreciate your well wishes.
Alpaca acquaintance conveyance abeyance.
Ooh, S.
Taraku, the thing that goes doink in the anime.
Doink, doink.
Jesse Boggs.
Michael Malloy.
Kyle O'Neill.
Spencer Y.
Robert Holden.
Goon Cahoots.
James Stavranos.
Bjarnir.
Chris Soul Skater Byers.
Fucking yeah. Sick.
Grab Comics, what's up?
Are you still feeling a little Soul Skater style there, Chad?
Yeah. You know, I just like Reb Comics as comics.
Cool, man. I'm Anthony Stoker for you.
Brony underscore Danza.
Max.
Vunderskin.
Paul Sentient My Buddy Doll pledges his unholy powers to the enemies of Paul.
Wow, a reverse pledge.
Whoa, it's a pledge to everyone but you.
Is this the first reverse pledge?
I say, Kevin, you can have the whole doll.
Okay, well, I told the doll that he can go to you, and now he's just ripped himself in half.
You two are my enemies?
I mean, is that not why we're assembling armies?
Oh. Have you not noticed the constant sabotage I've done to you?
Oh, no.
I'm a little hurt.
Hurt, aka Cyberbully.
Girthworm Jim.
Science toys.
Nice. Nailed it.
Larbin, soon to be New Englander.
Oh, congrats.
Welcome.
Talene Jones.
Logan Kilgus.
Bosferatu.
Starship 9.
Brendan Nichols.
Angelo Edward Longton Santone.
Smellities.
Proper spaceman, isn't it?
Bacon the Awkwardly Unseen.
Will Holmes.
Caleb Snyder, Grandmaster of Spells and Enchantments, pledges his wizard staff and ancient tome to Paul.
I search for the spell of doll unbinding.
Wait, you just said the doll free?
Now I'm going to unbind it from its soul that's within it.
He's always unbinding shit. Just let him do it.
Okay. My books hate me.
It's just a pile of pages. Blow away at any time.
That makes me really sad. 3 a.m. sleep.
Lumo Nuva.
Brian Udef.
Rest in peace, Paranoia Shop. You've been dead for about 8 years, but still available on streaming services if you want to listen.
It has been resting for a long time. JW.
Yeah.
Rip would like to apologize for his poor taste Paranoia Shop joke and respectfully request a mulligan.
Granted.
Take it.
Granted. Granted. A tall glass of dumb bitch juice.
Elodie.
Nowhere, Lucas.
Brian Storrow.
Psychosis.
Kyle Welch.
Sterner Stock.
Clint Deerking.
Agents Miskatonic.
C.L. Reagan.
Brian's Guh.
Justin.
Shayna S., welcome to the Book of Names.
And hello, the final new name to the Book of Names, Jaybird. Get on in.
Tweet, tweet.
Which way does your cup turn?
Turn your cups.
Thank you all. See you next time. We love you. Goodbye.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. Melt the ice. Bye.
Turn your cup.
Greasy ice.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change, max 1 offer per account.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.